Welcome to the Arrow Heights Podcast, broadcasting live from Arrow Heights Baptist Church in Broken Arrow, Oklahoma. Glad that you're joining us today. My name is Ryan Smith.
My name is Nathan Copeland.
My name is Joshua White.
Joshua.
Joshua, yes, there's a U and an A at the end of my legal name.
Joshua T. White.
No, there's no T, it's A.
Joshua.
It's A.
Aaron.
Nope.
Alan.
Yes.
Really?
Dang.
Wow.
Man, that was too easy to guess.
Joshua.
Joshua.
The rest, Schwa. Of the podcast, I'm going to refer to you as Joshua.
Some have referred to me as Schwa.
Wow.
Charles Schwab?
No.
Sorry, that was dumb.
Oh, my goodness. Well, hey, the weather has gotten cool. Not that we want to talk about weather on a podcast about Q&A stuff, but...
It's the one last gasp of winter, whatever, I guess.
And now baseball season for the Copelands. Is over. So great.
Whoa.
So you've got margin.
Man, I've been to so many cold baseball games this spring. It's really not funny, but.
We were up at First Baptist. We're doing Almighty Sports for Eli, doing soccer stuff.
Yeah.
First sport he's ever been involved in, which is pretty fun. It's just, I mean, he's six. Six co-ed soccer is just like herd ball. They chase it around. But
great.
We were at practice last Thursday, and then even on Saturday, and the wind was blowing so hard, you couldn't keep... the balls on the field, like it was just blowing them off of the field. It was crazy. Wow. So I don't know. The wind this year is just insane. But
well,
yeah,
like they say, it's where the wind comes sweeping down the plains.
That's right. It, indeed.
The second line of the song.
Ooh.
I thought it was rolling o'er the plains. Am I
sweeping?
Sweeping down.
Oh. Yeah.
Well,
thunder rolls.
I wasn't born in Oklahoma.
Garth Brooks.
And the lightning strikes.
Yeah.
What was the questions today?
Speaking of the winds of change, first question that came in has something to do with some aesthetic changes we made in the worship center. Question says this, when did the pulpit change? When did it change? It's like a chameleon. It just changed. Noticed it last week and meant to ask. Looks great. Still trying to figure out how that cross is floating there. Some kind of ethereal magic we've placed upon the podium.
Yeah.
Blue.
I'll take some steps back. We'll do a little bit of history of the podium because I appreciate the podium.
Isn't it a pulpit?
Pulpit.
Pulpit.
Podium, the same thing?
Pulpit. We'll call it pulpit.
Pulpit.
Yeah. Pulpit. So originally, Brother Bob had this beautiful pulpit that still is here in the building down one of our classrooms. Beautiful, large pulpit that, and Bob's a relatively tall guy. Andy, when he came, he's more in my stream. You know, we're not as tall.
Vertically challenged?
No.
No?
Bob is very tall. We are normal. We'll say.
Par for the course.
Andy, yes. Andy does not have a good vertical. Have you seen him play basketball? Sorry, go ahead.
he strikes me as less of a leg guy and more, you know, he could probably crush the basketball in his hand.
Brother is all forearms. Like, yes. Oh my goodness. Anyways, sidetrack.
Yeah, so.
Pulpit.
So when Andy came, he said, could we get a shorter pulpit? And they had this pulpit made. It's very wide, very broad, holds a lot of stuff. But there is some plexiglass in the middle. And they said, well, what do you want to put on that? They said, well, let's just put the logo. And so there's a big vinyl sticker of the Arrow Heights logo that's been there for years. And so we have updated the logo. And so we didn't necessarily just want to put the new logo on there. And so we looked at some different options and found this cross on Etsy and took off the sticker, put up the cross. It, if you don't know that there's plexiglass there, it really looks freaky. Mm. Like it's just suspended in midair. It's not, it's command stripped with four command strips.
We would love to say we did it with some kind of magnets to keep it floating there, but we're not quite that scientifically.
We just let it go and the Holy Spirit just held it.
Just holds it.
No, it's a couple of command strips.
Yeah.
But hey, the Lord has given us command strips.
That's right. And thank goodness for Etsy, right? Being able to match our, you know, the wood in the room. Like it just fits. It looks nice.
Yeah.
Shout out to Etsy.
Yes. Right? Shout out to Etsy. So
we're going to be endorsed at the end of this podcast. So.
Yeah. That's how it happened. That's how we got a shorter pulpit for Andy and I, and how the cross is suspended.
Yes, and fear not. It has not been there for months. It's only been there for two Sundays. And
yes.
So you did not miss more than 1 week. So well done noticing promptly as the changes were made.
Yeah.
So cool. Next question. You know, it ties into our Mark 6 passage that Nathan preached from yesterday, Mark 6, verses 30 through 44. The story of Jesus feeding the 5,000 right after John the Baptist's death. And so, you know, this first question that comes in, is there significance about the leftovers that we read about in verse 43? It says that at the end of that passage, it says that there were 12, is that right?
Hold on, 12 baskets full of broken pieces and of the fish.
Yes. And so is there a significance to how many or the reason why they collected the leftovers?
Yeah, I think so. I don't know how much I mentioned about that, but I don't think it's a coincidence. I mean, number 12 in the Bible is very significant. 12 tribes of Israel, 12 apostles, of course, looking to the new heavens and new earth. There's 12 gates. These 12 apostles are going to sit on 12 thrones, judging the 12 tribes of Israel. 12 is just everywhere in the Bible. The most practical thing, I think, is that the disciples would have had some provisions of food. I think by this time they are following Jesus pretty much full time, it seems. And so this was something that they would have been concerned about, you know. So Jesus is providing in abundance here and providing for their physical needs, which is really crucial. And he does it in a very dramatic and beautiful way. How much they really discerned that at the moment, it doesn't really go into any detail. But certainly, I think they would have been aware of that. But for us, looking back on the event, I think it's really encouraging to see that Jesus is not just providing something immediate, he's providing for their future. And again, as I try to bring out, the miracles of Jesus really do sort of point beyond themselves. And here, I think we can just be really encouraged that Jesus is not just doing something for that day. He is looking out for future needs. He's not just reacting. He is proactive in the way he provides for his people. In the Sermon on the Mount, you know, Jesus says, do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow can care for itself. Tomorrow will worry about itself. And you know, what he's saying there is not, you know, that, you know, God is not there in tomorrow. God is not bound by time. I think the point there is you cannot do anything about tomorrow. You may not even see tomorrow, right? But God provides in dramatic and abundant ways for his people. And this is just, this story just gives us a glimpse of that into God's work taking care of the future. And we realize that when we see, you know, that he sees it all, he knows it all, he plans it all, beginning, middle, and end, it just helps us to live by faith that he will take care of us and he has a plan moving forward for us. So yeah, I think there's some significance in it. Mark doesn't go into great detail, but I think the number 12 is a big indicator, and later on there's going to be 7 baskets full, I think, in Mark chapter 8 or 9 or something. So, you know, this is not the only miraculous feeding of a multitude in Mark's gospel, if I remember correctly. So, and I suppose the number 7 has some significance too, but we'll maybe wait till we get to chapter 8 or 9, whatever that is.
Yeah, yeah. The bare minimum, this certainly counts out the idea of some of the, what you said, quote unquote, Bible scholars who suggest that he took these 5 wheat thins and 2 sardines and broke them into itty bitty pieces. Because if they have 12 baskets filled over, those would have to be tiny little baskets.
Yeah. What are these baskets for, ants? What in the world?
And I like the, as well, the idea that, well, they had minimum 5,000 pre-made sandwiches,
right,
in a cave.
Yeah.
In a cave, just sitting there.
Yeah.
So were these just ones that you came across, or are these some like popular explanations?
I wouldn't say they're popular. The one about the breaking into tiny pieces, I can't remember the guy's name, and I didn't read his commentary, but it was in another commentary, and he's kind of an influential guy. I can't remember who it was off the top of my head, but yeah, these theories, you know, it's amazing if you just from the start just dismiss anything supernatural. Well, you're trying to make sense of the text, you know, they're trying to interpret what happened, and you just have to come up with all kinds of ideas, because it can't be what it says. It can't be a miracle. It can't be God, you know, working in history in miraculous ways, because they just dismiss that out of hand. Where you start is in many ways where you end up, you know, interpreting the Bible, and specifically these miraculous stories. So yeah, these are real, you know, smart people who come up with some things that are, like I said, pretty silly to try to make sense of it without God.
Yeah.
It has to be loaves of, was it Limbus bread?
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
The elvish Lord of the Rings that's bread, right. That it only takes a tiny little bit to fill them up.
That's right. Keep them wrapped in the leaves.
So maybe it's five loaves of Limbus bread.
Yeah.
He says like half of one will, you know, sustain a man for a month. He says, how many did you have? I had seven, or whatever he says.
One little hobbit.
Oh my goodness. Well, you know, just the abundance too, I think is important to note there. Like, you know, you quoted, was it Psalm 17 or 16:11? You know, you make known to me the path of life, in your presence there is fullness of joy. At your right hand are pleasures forevermore. I think just acknowledging that above and beyond, the Lord goes to provide for his people.
That's right.
I think is really just encouraging to walk away from that. So, and you can take that too far, right? I mean, the 12 stands for 12 pillars of, I mean, you got to be careful, obviously, sure, with going too far with those numbers. But yeah, so cool. Next question, and this could be a big one because this is our last one. Short question week. That's okay. You are an alliteration master, Nathan Copeland. Alliteration master, like not even kidding. And so the question says, this is the most alliterated sermon I've ever heard preached.
Wow.
Big deal, right? What did it take to come up with all of those W's, P's, and C's? And is there a reason preachers choose to alliterate their sermons?
Oh, my word. well, first of all, let me just say, I mean, and this is honest, you know, no joking, like it is a privilege to preach, and I love preaching, and I've studied preaching. I was not taught to preach that way, but you hear preachers do that sort of thing, and it's kind of become a little bit of a joke, you know, growing up as a Southern Baptist, sort of, you know, I kind of had different denominational influences, but Southern Baptists are kind of known for that, you know, 3 points in a poem, sort of preaching, and even sort of a pulpiteer sort of ministry. You know, some of these great preachers have been Baptists, partly because Baptists don't follow, like we talked about last time, the church calendar. So some of those church calendar ministries are just have shorter sermons, more, you know, scripture readings. Preachers are, you know, a lot of times Baptists, because Baptists, that's the main event, is preaching. So you hear Baptist preachers do that sort of thing. How I was taught to preach was in an organized kind of fashion, and it's real simple. I mean, you get the main point of the text. What is this passage talking about? And then the second question is, what is this passage saying about the main point? And that's where the sort of unfolding of the thing sort of comes in. You have 2, 3, 4, 5 points, whatever. And for me, I promise, it's not something I really even honestly try to do. What happens is I'll be thinking about the structure of the passage, and inevitably 3 out of 4 points have some sort of, I mean, I try to have some, what's the word, like parallelism in how it's stated, because again, it's unfolding this one main point. So there is going to be some consistency, because it's all pointing to one main thing. As one preacher said, as Martin Lloyd-Jones says, you want to hit them with a baseball, not a fistful of sand. A baseball is going to have more impact. This is what this text is about. Anyway, so inevitably 2 or 3 or 4 of those points have something similar, and they end in the same, or start, you know, with the same letter, whatever it is. So I think, oh man, in this case, it was the third point. I don't know if you remember my points, but it was, you know, something about the first one was comfort. The next one was compassion. The third one was capability, and then contentment. Capability, I was like, power, divine power. You know, he provides power. But I was like, well, okay. Capability, same thing, right? It starts with a C. So it's a joke, really, but and some people don't like it. Some people are like, that's just so cheesy. Other people are like, thank you so much. It really helped me remember. I don't know. It just sort of happens for me somehow. And so anyway, and I will say this. I mean, you don't really preach that way, Ryan, typically. I've seen you do the alliteration thing some, but, and I say this, I mean, this is just honest. I have learned a lot from you and from your preaching already. I mean, just your style is obviously different from mine. And I listen to preaching. Preaching has been a big deal for me in my life. I've learned so much from certain preachers. Certain sermons have really impacted me. But you're becoming one of my favorite preachers, honestly.
Oh, wow.
Absolutely. And even though you don't preach quite like that, like I do, you are so, your organization and structure is just sort of hidden in there, but in a way that's really clear and really brings out the meaning of the text, which is, I guess, is the point, hopefully.
Yeah. Well, praise God. I'm very humbled by that statement. Well, by that statement. I love getting to sit under your teaching and just the way the richness, because, and I was going to ask you, because this passage, you know, obviously it's highlighted, Jesus feeds the 5,000. When you read through it the first time, it's like, oh, we're going to talk about the big miracle, but you didn't spend as much time on that part of it, which seems like that's what everyone would want to like focus on. But there's a lot of context there. And there's a lot that, unless you understand what the disciples are thinking and what Jesus is wanting to teach them and just where they've been, that you miss the point of the miracle. Mm-hmm. And so I really appreciated that. You know, we were, I don't remember how far in before we actually got to that part, and I was like, that is awesome. Like, it really brings the miracle into the context of what Jesus is actually trying to do with the miracle, which is helpful to me as I'm reading ahead for this week. You know, is Jesus walking on water, and he walks across the thing, and they're going back to the Gerasenes, and, you know, Jesus says, why didn't you have faith? You know, this and that. And it says, where is it? Do not be afraid. He got into the boat with them, and the wind ceased, and they were utterly astounded, for they did not understand about the loaves. You know,
yeah.
There's a distinct message there that Jesus is carrying over, that is bigger than just, oh, look what Jesus can do.
Yeah,
check out the limbus bread. Mm-hmm. So there's so much there, and mm-hmm. so I appreciate that.
One of the things about reading the Gospels is, and you see this for me particularly in Matthew, but it's in all four of the Gospels, that Jesus is, in some sense, sort of reliving the experience of Israel.
Yeah,
he is the true Israel, where Israel came up short in terms of bringing God's blessing, bringing God's truth to the world. Jesus is going to succeed. And so, just for example, I mean, one that just pops into my mind is Jesus being baptized and then going out into the wilderness. I mean, Matthew structures that very carefully to show, just as, you know, the Israelites came through the wilderness, I mean, through the Red Sea, through the water, and then were led out into the wilderness, so is Jesus. You know, not for 40 years, but for 40 days. 40. It's not, you know, just coincidental, that number. So, yeah, there's so much context here in this story. You think about they're out in a desert place, and the Lord provides bread for them. Well, what does that remind you of? Of course, it reminds you of Moses. It also reminds you of Joshua. Also reminds you of Elijah. You know, there's a whole story in 2 Kings we didn't even get into, which is very much parallel. Well, Jesus is the fulfillment of that. He's the one who leads them beside still waters into green pastures. The fact that he talks about it's green. I mean, there are so many things that come together. The passage that Charlie read, the servant of the Lord in Isaiah 49, is picking up all those themes, right, and just pointing forward. There's still one coming. Here he is, you know. So, yeah, the challenge is not, at least in this passage, the challenge is not, oh, man, what am I going to say? It's what do I leave out of all that context, and how do you just sort of explain that briefly and clearly so that people get a sense of it, but you're not just overwhelming them. You know, because you can read some of these commentaries, they just like, wow, there's just no way. It's just piling up all these verses. So that's the challenge. But yeah, you're right. I mean, there's so much context here coming from the Old Testament. Of course, looking forward, that's something we didn't even talk about, is that looking forward, there's a messianic banquet coming, right? So I touched on it a little bit at the end. This passage is set within the whole Bible, and the whole Bible can be seen in little snippet forms in this passage, because that's who Jesus is. He is the fulfillment of the old covenant.
That's beautiful. I love the contrast even between Herod's Feast of Debauchery, you know, birthday party, Feast of Debauchery, and the Feast of the King being provided that you mentioned early on in the sermon. But also, like you said, pointing to his death and resurrection. When you talk about Lord's Supper and providing in that way, I thought that was really cool. We should have done Lord's Supper. That would have been a great tie-in.
Yeah, and that was something I had never noticed before. But one of the commentaries really brought that out, and I said, "Wow, there's no way the language that Mark uses, there's no way that's just coincidental. You know, this is in Jesus's mind and Jesus's plan. Mark, Peter." Right, who's given this story to Mark, as Mark then structures it under the inspiration of the Holy Spirit, he's using the exact same phrase, in both places. This is a preview of what's coming. This is what Jesus was intending, of course, and John brings that out. That's another thing about this passage, is that all four Gospels have their own telling of it. Of course, John's is kind of the most interesting as he goes into the whole bread of life thing, but just a lot there.
That's good.
Which is kind of one reason that a lot of our small groups have gone to discussing the sermon text further, because you said there's so much there and so much you have to selectively leave out. It's so many rabbit trails that you can kind of flag along the way and then allow our groups to follow. Mm-hmm. I was able to sit in with one of our groups this past Sunday, just as we discussed the previous text, and just how rich it is in application to today, and being able to explore some of those things and point to other areas of scriptures that this reminded someone of, and going down those different rabbit trails. So highly encourage you, if you're not involved in a small group, get involved in a small group. Not all of our small groups go through the sermon text based studies that you put together, but I highly encourage those. If you're not plugged into one, plug into one. It allows you to go deeper into those texts and see more of these just folds and angles. And it's like looking up close at a diamond. You never quit looking at it.
No, I think that's great. And you can find all those details at arrowheights.org. If you're looking to get plugged into a small group, you can find that. Also, just to stay up to date with what we've got going on, even have access to the discussion material that we're putting out for small groups, you can subscribe to our weekly e-newsletter that goes out on Thursdays, and you can find that at arrowheights.org as well. You guys got anything else you want to add? Good. Cool. Well, we're wrapped. Shorter day today. If you've got questions for us on the podcast in the future, the number is 918-280-9628, and we will talk to you next week on the Arrow Heights podcast.